From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Yes, it is a beautiful day the Lord has made. Let's always keep that in mind. As it says in the good book, let us rejoice and be glad in it. If you're here today, there's a good reason, so go out and find it. Well, we are pleased and honored to be joined by Kathy Connor, the Chancellor of the Diocese of Sacramento. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Good to have you with us. You know, this virtual reality we're all living in, all I hear is voices. I don't get to see people anymore.
I know. You know, it's amazing. We've all had to make adjustments, and I guess the upside is that we are learning about all kinds of new ways to communicate with each other. Yeah. And new and technology, really, that's always been there, but we just have not taken advantage of it, and we certainly are now.
I'm watching my own kids. I joke that we're sheltering in place with four teenagers, I look at them and they're on their devices talking with their cousins in distant cities, you know, and actually having a ball doing it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But God bless you for a shelter at home with four teenagers.
Heaven on earth. You know, it's funny because I know watching Mass on television. And of course, that's why we have a teenage boy, because he's the only one that can figure out how to get how to get it onto the TV.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know that it's available online, but I could never figure out how to actually get it up. Well, there it is. And there's our own pastor, Father Ray from St. James in Davis, soldiering on, you know. And there's six of us in the living room, some on the couch, some, you know, sitting on the floor, leaning against the wall, some sitting in a chair, and all eyes glued on Father Ray.
Yeah.
And it's almost embarrassing to say, but honestly, I think paying better attention and listening to the homily and listening to the readings and paying attention to the consecration in all parts of the Mass, even more than sometimes when we're there in person. It's remarkable.
But well, there's no Well, first of all, there's no distractions.
No distractions.
Mm-mm. And I think. Well, for me, I'll say, and I think for others that I've spoken to, it's something that perhaps we took for granted.
Yep.
It was always there and always available, and suddenly it was taken away.
Yeah, just boom.
And so all of a sudden now its importance has been elevated for each of us personally.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing that I call this an enormous blessing, the youngest of the kids, he just turned 15, just finished in the ninth grade, after Mass one day, after virtual Mass, whatever you want to call it, Mass on TV, he says, "I miss going to Mass."
Oh, my goodness.
And music to a parent's ears.
Sure.
I mean, they're good kids, and but they're teenagers, and, you know.
That's right.
By golly, to hear him actually say, "I miss going to Mass," just brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah, let me get the tape recorder.
Exactly.
What did you say again?
Exactly. You know, it's just wonderful to hear, and it means that somewhere deep in his heart, that seed is growing.
Yes, you're doing a good job as a parent, Bob.
Oh, thank you. I'll give more credit to Shelley than to myself, We're trying. And, you know, the other thing is we're eating virtually every meal together.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even think of the last time that happened.
Yeah, yeah. You know? They're really, you know, I'm sure people sometimes have had to think really hard, but there are some very positive outcomes with what's been happening, and that is one of them, that families have been given time that they never really had before.
Yeah.
Through very difficult circumstances, you know, people are realizing, boy, I am able to spend, have more meals with my children, be physically present to them more than ever before.
Yeah, it's there, you know, and the, you know, the bottom line that we always tell our kids, both of us, Shelley and I, God's in charge. He's not just sort of knows about this pandemic. He's in the middle of it.
Yeah.
He's got our back. He's got our front. He's got, he counts every hair on our head. You know, he's with us through this, and he will, in his own way, make good out of this.
And I think that's something so important we all have to remember. And even as you opened up the show today, you know, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it. You know, that's been a struggle for people. There's so much going on and much negativity, and it really can start to wear one down. I think we all have had to deal with that, and we've got to fight through that, and every morning wake up and somehow, with however we do that, I know for me, my prayer time in the morning has become even more essential to ground myself with today, and focusing on what matters, and to continue to find hope and joy in the day.
Yeah, there's just, you know, there's so many things you can, you know, the stuff that I don't know where you learn it in childhood. I went to catechism classes on Saturday mornings. We didn't have a Catholic school in our town, and I went on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 every Saturday morning against my will.
Yeah, good parents.
I'd wake up at about 7:30 on Saturday morning and pray to God that Mom wouldn't wake up in time to send us to catechism.
Oh.
And I'm going, wait a minute, who are you praying to here, Bob?
Yeah.
You think you're going to get help with that?
Yeah.
But the one that, and somebody called it to mind the other day for me, from Jeremiah, and this one just gets right into your soul and your heart. For I know well the plans I have in mind for you, plans for your welfare and not for woe, so as to give you a future of hope. When you call me and come and pray to me, I will listen to you. When you look for me, you will find me. With the word will underlined and in quotes and italicized, you will find me. It is so uplifting and so heartening to think that this is God's promise. You look for me, you will find me. I will listen to you when you talk to me. Wow.
Yeah.
That's profoundly powerful.
Yeah. They're very affirmative statements. It's not maybe or if this or that. It's very, very direct and very sure.
And it's speaking to you personally.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm aware of what's going on in the world, Bob. I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. No, this is, I know what's going on in your life, and I will listen to you. And if you look for me, you will find me. Boy, that's, I want to go home and do that right now, or go to church and do that right now. I want to talk to you, God.
Yeah.
And he doesn't say where it has to be. You do it anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, you have a very big job. You always have a very big job, but it seems to me your job must have gotten more difficult by about 10 times being the chancellor of this huge, huge diocese. I mean, we're talking about 20 counties going all the way up to the Oregon border, all the way to the Nevada border, you know, all the way to the Pacific Ocean, and halfway down the valley. it's and so diverse.
Right.
Diverse, not just, you know, we got mountains and rivers and lakes and farms and all that kind of diversity, enormous diversity racially, ethnically, language-wise, et cetera. But also even you know, politically, you look at one county politically, compare it to another county politically, they're way different, all
right.
within this same diocese.
Right, right. No, and it's, you know, in working through this, you know, issues related to the pandemic, we've really, if the fact that we are so large and are comprised of 20 counties has never been more apparent. As we worked with counties and trying to come up with guidelines, you know, Bishop had a great team he put together to assist him with the guidelines with the reopening of our churches.
Mm-hmm.
We had to send those guidelines out to each of the local health officers
right.
of every county.
Right.
They, you know, so again, you know, understanding and respecting that every one of them needed to get a copy of it, and if had any questions or concerns to get back to us. So there just wasn't it just wasn't one entity that it went to. It was again recognizing we are comprised of all 20 counties, and all counties, you know, were given the authority to decide when and how they would open in this manner.
Yeah, and each county, you're right, each county was its own boss, if you will, and it varied greatly from county to county. And you look at Sacramento, the number of cases in Sacramento County, and compare it to the number of cases in Modoc County.
Right.
And you people in Modoc County, you say, we don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
You know, I mean, what pandemic? I mean, we're counties that until very recently had total cases in the single digits. A great number of counties who have had no deaths at all. And then you get into the larger urban areas where it may not be raging, but it's certainly much, much more serious. And it's trying to, from this standpoint, have one size that fits all. It doesn't work. You can't do one size fits all. And so you're dealing with 20 separate entities in a very intimate way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's quite a chore. And hoping to get it right.
Right. Well, I'll tell you the one thing I can say without hesitation is that all of the county health officers have been wonderful to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's a pleasant surprise, but truly, as we've had to deal with different situations that have come up, we call and there is help available fairly quickly. They really do have systems in place to help answer questions and to serve. So that has been extremely helpful to us, you know, as we have reopened and, you know, faced some challenges here and there.
Yeah, I've dealt with a number of county health officers, you know, as in following this pandemic and through my work here, just trying to keep myself informed. And I found them to be enormously responsive and very, very helpful.
Yes.
And yet, you see around the country, and even here in California, a number of them retiring, taking a different job. Not a great number, but just saying the pressures of this have gotten enormous. You know, and they are on the hot seat. I mean, I would not want to be the one to issue an order telling a restaurant that you have to close.
Right.
Or
right.
telling some other business, you have to close. I mean, just close. And there's not much we can do for you. You just have to close because the science tells us that this is one of the places where this disease is getting spread, and through no fault of the business owner.
Right.
You know, what a difficult job that is.
Yeah. There's, you know, there's just no easy answers. And people, I believe they're trying to do the right thing. And it's just, and there's great differences of opinion out
there. Yeah, sure.
We all know, trying to balance the health aspect of this pandemic versus the economic health, you know, that's out there. So it's very complex. It's very complex, and I do think people are just trying to make the best decisions they can.
They indeed are, and it's interesting to me that, you know, just by chance, when you talk about the economic, some people are in a business that's A-okay, just, you know, full speed ahead, just business as usual. Other people are in a business that is, boom, it's just cut off at the knees, you know.
Right.
And you go, wow, who knew? Who could have predicted? And, you know, you own a theater and you think, well, this is a great life. You know, I sell tickets and make popcorn and people come here and have a good time. And, boom, one day your theater's just closed.
Right.
Who could have imagined that was going to happen? And you're just going to have to make do on your own, you know. And it's not that you did something wrong or you were, you know, selling drugs or something. You know, it's just you just happen to be in the occupation that just doesn't work for the pandemic.
Right.
And here we are. Whoever thought? Never in my lifetime did I think we would actually see the closing of the Catholic churches. If you had asked me what could have caused this to happen, I thought, well, what? We got taken over by a foreign godless power? Or no. And I've been so pleased and proud in this diocese how closely our leaders, Bishop Soto, yourself, and all the priests have worked with the health officials, whether at the state level or the county level, sometimes just at the city level, to be as safe as we can be.
Yeah, and that's been the number one goal is to keep people safe. But be able to open our churches to celebrate Mass publicly again, you know, with even though it's limited numbers, but just that is available. You know, the Bishop has worked closely with the governor's office, as you know, in them developing their guidelines, and again, the goal has been to keep people safe, but to allow us to celebrate Mass again. I know for all of us, for everyone, it's just been such a sacrifice, such a hardship to not be able to attend Mass and receive our Lord through the Eucharist. It's been a suffering. You know, we really have, in a very different way that we never thought would come to be, we have become the suffering body of Christ.
Yes.
in that regard. But I think we are at a point right now where our churches are open. Mm-hmm. Mass is available. We're following all the guidelines that have been given to us, you know, 25% of building capacity, but no more than 100. For our larger churches, lots of ideas were given to pastors with how to determine who can come, how to develop the list needed for contact tracing, just all of the things that needed to happen that ahead of time. Bishops tried to empower the pastors based on their own individual parish circumstances to make those kinds of decisions parochially at the parish level.
And you know, for anybody who would think that this was somehow forced upon the church, can go back. Virtually every flu season, we we have our own regulations about no shared cup and things right. like that. We've been taking health precautions throughout our history.
Yes, and in particular, Bishop Soto's been very strong on that.
Yes.
You know, there's guidelines we follow and check every week to watch the progression of the flu.
Mm-hmm.
And then a minute it reaches a certain level that, you know, and again, very scientific. It's not just, well, it feels like there's a lot of flu out there.
Right.
It's that becomes the basis for it's time to suspend the cup. And then he has always had us wait until we have 2 weeks of consistent numbers that shows that the flu has declined to a certain level, and then the suspension is lifted. So, you know, the lay faithful's health has always been an important factor to him in determining the use of the cup. And it's that helped this year. I personally believe that helped that this year because, again, those guidelines were followed.
Mm-hmm.
The flu reached a certain level where the cup was suspended. And so at the point that the coronavirus began and that was being looked at, that had already been implemented.
Right. They actually overlapped.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, it's just one thing that has been pointed out and I think is very heartening and people really need to take advantage of is we have Mass 7 days a week in virtually every parish in this diocese.
That's correct.
You know, and the bishop has been very clear. If you don't feel comfortable about this, if you've got underlying conditions, if you're of a certain age, if you, whatever, for whatever reason, if you're not comfortable coming back, that obligation is suspended. Don't worry about that. But consider going on a Monday or a Tuesday. I know in my parish we have usually an 8 a.m. Mass and many days of the week a 5:30 p.m. Mass. Other parishes will have a noon Mass. And these are lesser attended generally,
mm-hmm.
but it's a great way to spread it out. And I think it's a good way for people to take advantage of being able to go to Mass, able to receive the Eucharist, which is just so crucial to all of us, and not feel like they're taking a spot from somebody else.
That's right. Yeah. No. That's right. The lifting of the lifting of the obligation for Mass is, you know, still in place and will probably be for the unforeseen future.
Yes.
But there is Mass, a daily Mass, and for people, sometimes avoiding the weekends is best, and going to a weekday Mass is a more comfortable thing for one to choose. I know I'm a parishioner at St. Clair's, which,
mm-hmm.
of course, is the largest parish in the diocese, and they have a system in place that Monday mornings at 10 o'clock, it's called Sign Up Genius, you
right.
can click on to get your spots. They ask you to just choose one Mass a week. And if I want to go on the weekend, I have to be sure I do it Monday because by Tuesday, well, some of the Sunday morning Masses are filled by evening time,
mm-hmm.
but within one day they're all gone. But during the week, you know, it's fairly, most of the time, and I'd say 90% of the time, you can register for a weekday morning Mass.
Wow. What you know, it's, you mentioned St. Clair, there's so many. I don't have a favorite parish in this, but I remember a couple of times doing events at St. Clair, and one time presenting a workshop there with Deacon Kevin Staskow, and just a parenting kind of workshop, you know, the domestic church kind of workshop, and was lucky enough to get there early, and Father George Snyder, you know, took me through the church and the grounds,
yeah.
And I just, I thought, oh, what a beautiful, beautiful church, and what a great parish that is. And I joke with them that the parking lot's so big they need golf carts to ferry people up to the, yeah. up to the church. It's a very vibrant, active parish.
It is. Yes, it is. It is. And I will say personally, it's an odd thing to be at Mass there with just 100 people. You
yeah.
feel like hardly anybody is in the church. That is one wish, one hope that we had that was different than the outcome of the 25%, no more than 100, is if they would allow a full 25% of church capacity, of building capacity, that a parish like St. Clair's could have quite a few more people be able to attend Mass.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. You know, that one struck me a little odd, and again, I'm not a scientist, and I'm willing to accept the judgment of that. But it did. I thought, okay, 25% or 100, but then it's whichever is fewer. You know, and I thought, wow. I think Our Lady of the Angels in the Cathedral in Los Angeles, or the Cathedral in Orange, how big they are, and 100 people is about 3% of capacity.
Right.
You know,
right.
But it's the way it is right now. But the same with St. Clair. I don't know the exact capacity, but certainly you could do. It seems you could do social distancing and 25% capacity, and you'd come up with considerably more than 100.
Yes, you would. You would. And I don't know if there were concerns related to restrooms or just...
Possibly, yeah.
So many people, you know, even though they're apart. I'm not... Who knows? We're kind of guessing at this point, but we'd love to see that down the road revised, but we'll have to see if that becomes a reality at any point. But for now, it is the 25% or 100, whichever number is smaller.
Yeah.
So yeah.
We're talking with Kathy Connor, the Chancellor of the Diocese of Sacramento. Kathy, just for new listeners and people that maybe haven't heard you on the air before, just give a little thumbnail sketch of what it means. What is a chancellor? What's the history of being a chancellor? What's the role in a diocese?
Well, according to canon law, every diocese must have a chancellor. Many years ago, a chancellor had to be a priest.
Mm-hmm.
It's been within the last 30 to 40 years that canon law changed and allowed a lay person to assume this position. And a chancellor, all chancellors, their job by canon law is you're kind of a church notary. So
mm-hmm.
anytime bishop makes an appointment, a pastor appointment, his signature is on the letter or document, and the chancellor's signature is underneath as a witness, as
mm-hmm.
again a church notary. And I'm the keeper of the records, of the archives, making sure that we are appropriately keeping all our documentation and files related to the church. But other than that, it's up to each bishop what else they want their chancellor to do. And for me, I serve on bishop's kind of core management team.
Mm-hmm.
I oversee the building. In some respects, I guess you could compare it to a CEO.
Uh-huh.
I have, you know, a number of direct reports in the building. I take on projects assigned by the bishop and just try and assist him with different things that are occurring along the way, walk beside him and try and take some of it off his plate.
What's the toughest part of your job?
I would say that the toughest part over the years has been talking to victims,
mm-hmm.
Especially the first calls that come in.
Yeah.
Those are very painful. Their pain is palpable through the phone, but it's quite a moment for them to be able to call in and be able to speak about it and make that first report.
Right.
That's what jumps out initially in my mind as as the toughest part. But it's also been hesitate using the word great joy, but there's been a lot of satisfaction in being able to help those individuals as best as they can to make some sense, if that's even a way to say it, but to find the help they need to get to a better point, better spot in their life. So.
And how has the pandemic affected your role, your duties here in the diocese?
Well, a lot of our time has been spent developing, helping Bishop develop protocols for the return to Mass, and then all the different sacraments he has published for the priests, guidelines with how to, handle the sacrament of reconciliation, baptism, marriages. So, and then the questions, fielding questions that come in from parish offices. That's taken up a lot of time, trying to help the priests grapple with things that are coming up, and their staff as well. And here in this building, of course, when we went into a shelter in place, there were probably, I would say half a dozen of us that, we really deemed were essential workers, to the functioning of the diocese. And so we were here every day to work alongside with Bishop through the various problems and challenges that were coming along. So we right here now are starting to reopen. Our directors, the directors of all our departments reported back to work 5 days a week last week, and then next week the rest of the staff will be coming back but working half here and half at home. So we don't want a full building at this point. We're keeping the number at 50 or below, and then we have all our protocols in place now. Employees come through the front door. We all get temperature checks every morning. Face masks are required. I mean, there's just been a lot to develop, to work with the counties to understand what is required, what's recommended, so that we keep our employees here safe as well.
Yeah, first time I had the temperature check, I thought they put it right up against your forehead. I thought they were taking my IQ.
Yeah. That's funny. I've never heard that before. Well, so anyway, it's just the safety of our employees is.
It's very
paramount.
Very non-invasive.
Yes, it is. I mean, I never knew these kinds of things existed.
No.
So and they take seconds. You'd think, oh my gosh, we have to take everyone's temperature. That's going to take forever. Well, it's 5 seconds.
It's almost
fast now, and it's amazing how people are able to adjust to new way of life. And so now, I put the mask on right before I come in, and I walk through and go up to the front desk, and they zap me with the temperature and have a good day, and up away I go to my office. So
yeah, it's funny. I mean, my wife tells me I'm better looking with a mask on. So
oh my! So we have a new normal here, right?
We have a new normal. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it's almost amusing to get your temperature. I mean, I think of it, you go to the doctor's office and they say, put it under your tongue and keep it there for two. I remember from my childhood, it was like you had that thermometer in your mouth for like 5 minutes or something before they came and read your temperature. Now it's just this little thing against the wand against your forehead, and it's boom.
That's true. Well, Bob, when you just asked me too, what are my days like? The other part of it is that the life of the church and the work of the church goes on, and so that all continues. And again, as disruptive as this pandemic has been, the other thing is life goes on. And so, you know, there are appointments that need to be made by the bishop, pastor changes, and the work of the church. You know, how do we continue youth and adult ministry virtually when people can't meet? How does our CIA, you know, so it's just how do we all make the adjustments needed so that, you know, the work of the church can continue.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of us. It's like we're the giant spiritual grocery store, and we got to keep the shelves stocked. You know, we can't say, oh no, the cupboard's bare, we're going to close for a while. We're not allowed to do that.
That's right. You know, the Department of Family and Faith Formation, their team was all tasked to come up with, you know, how can we help the domestic church at home? What tools and resources can we give to parents? You know, there's a lot of work that's been done to try and help not only parishes and catechists and religious education leaders, but also parents in the home, you know, to keep the faith alive, to give them tools and resources needed to handle this very challenging time.
Indeed. Well, Kathy, just so appreciate you taking the time to be with us this morning, and also I appreciate the tremendous job you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We're lucky to have you, and I hope our paths cross again soon, hopefully not virtually.
I know. I'll have to see when I spot you in the building sometime.
Very good.
All right. Well, God bless you, Bob.
Hey, God bless you too, Kathy. Thanks for everything.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care. That's Kathy Connor, the Chancellor of the Diocese of Sacramento. And talk about multitasking. Everything is on her plate. It just is. We're just lucky to have her. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hey, this is Chris Owens. I'm the Director of the Office of Family and Faith Formation for the Diocese of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate that. Well, welcome back, everyone, and we welcome in Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine. Julie, good day to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Doing very well.
Good.
As I think everybody says, very well, all things considered.
Yeah. Did you hear that email come in, or did I just hear it?
Hmm?
Oh, I turned off the ringer to my cell phone.
Oh, no.
Because it was ringing in an email, but I didn't know if you could hear it or not.
I'm looking at this, and we talked a little bit about parts of this Catholic Herald, but it is so full, if you will, some great stories in it that we didn't get through all of it, and a lot more to talk about. We must be the change, the July-August edition of the Catholic Herald.
I think you did talk to, I noticed on your schedule, I think you did already speak with Charlene Harris.
Yes, we did.
Yes, okay. So, but she is featuring the magazine, but she probably speaks better for herself than
And we've spoken with Deacon Casey Walker as well.
Oh, you did. Okay, good. And, of course, I think we talked in the last show about the last time I was on about Father Bart Landry.
We've spoken with him several times, yes.
Okay, good. And then the other person featured in our cover story is actually Deacon Casey's daughter, Adriana.
Right.
Who's 22 years old. She grew up in Vallejo. And she says she was fortunate to live in one of the most diverse zip codes in America.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been a lifelong member of St. Basil Parish. I never know when they say Basil.
Or Basil. You know, it's...
Basil is the herb, right?
MC for the annual vocations dinner. I'm thinking 3 or 4 years ago, they always move the vocation dinner around from one parish to another.
Uh-huh.
And it was in Vallejo that, believe it or not, it was really hot in Vallejo, which is a bit unusual. They usually get that sea breeze pretty early. It was very hot.
Right.
And it was in the gym, and air conditioning wasn't working. And they don't need air conditioning in Vallejo too often. And I was there early, and one of the women's groups at the parish was selling raffle tickets. And then there was a booth with the Knights of Columbus, and they were selling drink tickets. And of course the one group was all women, and the Knights of Columbus was all men. And so being the MC, I didn't want to make a mistake, and I had asked people ahead of time, is it St. Basil? Is it St. Basil? I went over to the women's group, and I said, you know, to buy a raffle ticket, and I said, so how do you pronounce it? Oh, it's St. Basil. Then I went over to the Knights of Columbus, and I said, how do you pronounce this? And they said, St. Basil.
Oh.
So...
So I guess either is correct.
I guess either is correct. B-A-S-I-L. Yes.
So, anyway, Adriana had a great interview with her. She graduated from St. Basil School and the MIT Academy in Vallejo. She says that in her own life, she did not feel that she had experienced much overt racism. Mm-hmm. And she thought that prejudice was a better term to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
She says, my first experience with prejudice was when I was in elementary school, as I was one of only two kids out of 40 in the class who were black.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it was prejudice until I was in my teens and in a more diverse school. I know I'm not the only one who felt prejudice. Other people who feel they are different may feel they don't fit in with the church at times. I don't think it was intentional, but kids just wanting to hang out with other kids who like them. We often fear the things we don't know or understand, she said. And then she, after high school, she went on to study at Florida A&M University for 2 years. Then she decided to return home, so she's now finishing up at Solano Community College and working toward her bachelor's degree in biomanufacturing and biotechnology.
Wow.
Don't ask me what those are. I do think I know a little bit of what they
and,
are.
And hopes for a career in the biopharmaceutical industry.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So she's been very close to the church all her life. She says St. Basil, the parish wasn't always as diverse in race, culture, and ethnicities as it is today. She says, today we see many different cultures at the parish, African American, Latino, and Asian. I'm concerned because many young adults have left the parish for various reasons, being influenced by social media and even things like astrology. If you're not strong in your faith, then you can be swayed by many other opinions, and that can lead you to drastically change your beliefs altogether. She said, communicating effectively and frequently with her parents, Dean Casey and Andrea, her mom, have been crucial in keeping her tied to her Catholic faith. She says, having your parents understand what's going on in your life as a teen and young adult, struggles and challenges you are going through is crucial. Some kids don't have that kind of relationship and are more influenced by social media, friends, and outside forces. Parents have to understand these influences also. Interesting that social media is mentioned so much as an influence. Because I think if you don't have sometimes that communication with your parents and family and other mentors, then I think you, I mean, I'm just guessing, but I think then you look to fill the gap, you know, sometimes by what other people are saying on social media. I'm sure you've covered this before. And really what I think we all know what happens on social media is not really, I guess I'll say, the reality of everyday life.
But with teenagers, oh, my goodness. With any of us, but it seems like it happens more with teenagers. They go on social media and somebody says something about their appearance or their personality or something frequently negative, and it's devastating.
Yeah.
Because there it is. It's like the printed word. It's just stark. It doesn't come across as one person's opinion. It comes across as reality. And does everybody think this? And then people are piling on. And it's like, wow, you unfortunately hear about suicides because of this.
Oh, definitely.
And
I recall doing the story, I think, maybe for our Catholic education issue at the program they have at St. Mary's School in Sacramento, where they have yard monitors. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but they have the 7th and 8th graders working with the much younger kids to intervene, on the recess playground or something happens. Mm-hmm. And they have them do conflict resolution, like right there on the playground.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Said, what are you going to do to resolve and all of that? But I recall in that story, just even talking to some of the 6th grade girls who were serving in that program, they would say, anybody, anytime can go home and post something about me on Snapchat or all these various social media, and I can't get on there and say it's not true.
Yeah. And even if you could, it just throws fuel on the fire. And it seems as if the whole goal of social media when somebody is commenting is to be sharp and pointed and maybe snarky or, just boom, boom, boom. Like I saw so-and-so and boom. And you say just one negative, nasty thing. It seems like that's the goal, to see how much reaction you're going to get from it.
And a lot of it, yes.
Oh, and it just gets to be, I've seen adults on Facebook get into basic, verbal fist fights.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's why I just post my cycling photos. And then some people are some people can be snarky about that, which is not nice.
I, for all the joys that social media could bring, you know, posting family photos and keeping in touch with people and all that kind of stuff.
Really, how often that everything is negative? It's not everything's negative.
Yeah.
But you know, it seems like you either get really positive or really negative sometimes from people's posts.
Yeah.
And it's just not. I guess what I was trying to say. It's not the not represent. It's filtered. It's not the representative reality of the normal joys, challenges, ups and downs of your everyday life.
Yep.
And it can do a lot of good. We spread a lot of information on social media, and you know, we certainly use it at the diocese and with our magazine to get the word out there, but
sure,
we have to realize there's a lot of negatives with it also. So back to Adriana. She has been very involved with the Gospel Mass on the second Sunday of each month at 11:30 at St. Basil,
mm-hmm,
which anyone's welcome to attend. Well, I guess not in great crowds right now, but with distancing and masks on, and how many, I don't know how many are allowed to be in that church right now, as it varies church by church.
Yeah.
But she says she fell in love with the Gospel Mass because growing up African American, the music I listened to was Christian music, so it felt like I was at home. It felt really good to hear gospel music and share it with so many people from our community. It's affected people in a positive way, and they've wanted more. She says the choir she's involved with spans a range of ages. One of the faith formation teachers at the parish requires the seventh graders to attend the Mass and participate in the choir. The Mass has brought some people back to church. She says they're looking for something with more soul. The Mass is what some people have been looking for. It's something different, and sometimes people need different. So she's encouraging listening sessions Monday at Adult Catholic so they can talk about racism and prejudice.
You know, I think there's a good example where, you know, you want to get together and talk about prejudice and racism, and it's one of those areas where social media can be very helpful, but if you're not doing it in person, it's not a conversation. It's a series of you post what you think, and then I post what I think, and, oh, I don't like what you said there. And you know what I mean? And
yeah,
when you're face-to-face having a conversation, there's a lot of body language, there's a lot of eye contact, there's hand gestures, there's nodding, like so the other person's talking and you're nodding. Okay, I'm hearing you. Whereas when it's just you type your little sentence in and then I type my little sentence back, a lot of context is missing.
Well, and I think probably Deacon Casey, I didn't hear his interview with you, but I'm sure he talked about how they've done worked with Dr. Jason Javier
right,
Watson, assistant principal at St. Francis, who is really an expert on racial literacy and,
mm-hmm,
and learning some of these processes by which you can dialogue and have discussions without, you know, with people being able to share their experiences without it becoming, I guess, a yelling match or something.
Yeah.
Because everyone's experience is valid. We want to hear everyone's experience.
Yeah,
but you do need kind of an overall process, I think, by which to follow so that people feel respected and heard.
Absolutely. Well, as you quote Adriana here, you have to inch into a topic and get more people comfortable talking about it before they share their experiences. We can become more comfortable talking about racism. You might be uncomfortable with saying anything, but I hope in the future we are a place where people feel comfortable in speaking freely and listening and understanding as well.
So I think, I'm sure that process is open for any parish or school or whatever in conjunction with the Diocese Task Force Against Racism to set up. And I know there's some ongoing programs with that. I believe there's been a couple of parishes that have kind of taken it even further and are designing some of their own programs. So I think overall, you know, who knew? I mean, this has always been a timely topic, but even more so in our present circumstances and what's going on today. And I think I've heard a lot of confusion out there about how can we just kind of maybe discuss some of these issues without it being so contentious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are people that are they're afraid to really sit down and talk about these things because they're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing.
Yes.
And unintentionally, you know, or maybe with the best intentions, but not understanding the sensitivities, might say something that gets taken, taken not the way they meant it, or
yes.
You know, and so they stay quiet, and that's not good either.
Right. So let me touch on one more story. We have a story about four young adults from our diocese who have served as missionaries in the U.S. and abroad. So really interesting story to do and talk to these young people. One is Luisa Quiroz, who graduated from UC Davis in March. She, more than a lot of us do at this young age. She's 23 years old. She's had six mission experiences in the past 5 years.
Wow.
She says, be courageous and follow Christ. Jesus is asking us to go and share his love, to share the gospel with everyone, because there are a lot of people who don't know about Jesus and aren't Catholic faith. Jesus is calling you and putting a desire in your heart. So she graduated from UC Davis with a bachelor's degree in clinical nutrition and a minor in Spanish. She was very involved with the Newman Catholic Center for most of her 5 years. She served on the student council and its chair of the women's group. She's originally from Mexico, but grew up mostly in Calexico, California, went to Catholic schools there.
Those are twin cities.
They are twin cities, yeah. Right across the border, yeah, from each other.
Julie, and she's from my home parish, St. James in Davis.
She is.
Julie, we're flat out of time.
We
got to bring
time.
You on okay. To talk about the rest of these missionaries.
Oh, my gosh, not part three. People are going to be tired of me.
But these are
tired of
me. They're fascinating stories about these young adults who've been missionaries, and we need to talk about that.
Okay.
Thanks
I'll
so much.
It up to you.
And
okay. Take
we'll look
care.
Forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.